The Immigrant Council of Ireland is the leading independent human rights organization in Ireland, working to defend the rights of migrants and their loved ones and ensure a welcoming, diverse society. We provide direct support to migrants on all aspects of immigration issues through our helpline and independent law center, and promote diversity and inclusion across Irish society. For free immigration advice and support, contact our helpline on 01-674-0200 or email info@immigrantcouncil.ie. You can also visit our website at www.immigrantcouncil.ie to access information and subscribe to our email newsletter. To support our work, donate online at www.immigrantcouncil.ie/donate.
Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we are back talking about the immigrant experience in Ireland. Before I get into that, just to let you know, Martin is still unwell, so you are unfortunately stuck with me, which saves you from him giving you the big put your hands in your pockets and go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and you're stuck with me saying put your hands in your pockets and go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Just a bit of housekeeping. The podcasts are going to be coming thick and fast, but we are looking for you guys to let us know what your views have been of the last of 2020. So if you are a member, there is an email in your inbox with the address, so you can head over there and send us whatever voice clips you want, or send us some suggestions, or actually send us some feedback, negative and positive. It's all well received. Anyway, enough of that. We're delighted to be rejoined on the line by CEO of the Immigrant Council of Ireland, Brian Corona. Brian, how are things?
Good, thank you very much. Trying to get things wound down before Christmas, but getting there.
Yeah, look, we spoke last week to Fiona Finn around International Human Rights Day and the 21st. Happy birthday to Direct Provision. It turned 21 last week. And I know you've been heavily involved in some of the discussions and the thoughts and the processes and the ideas that have gone forward that are ultimately hoping to give us this white paper on the ending of direct provision, as I understand it. Can you give me any kind of indication on how that is going?
Yeah, well, I guess, as you say, there's been a lot of activity in the last couple of months since the Catherine Day report came out during the summer, and now that the white paper is being written. I would say, you know, we're involved definitely, but there are other organizations that are doing far more work on it than us, like MASI, the Movement of Asylum Seekers, like NASC that you've spoken to, like the Refugee Council and others. But I think it's definitely a collective effort. You know, we're trying to add value around the victims of trafficking that are housed in direct provision that we talked about before as well, mm-hmm. which is still a continuing issue. But I think, you know, there's a general sense I would have, and I'm an optimist anyway, but there's a general sense I would have of optimism as regards what's going on at the moment. So there's been a lot of consultation at a broad level with the department under Minister O'Gorman and the officials. In terms of, like, they've had big consultation sessions, but they've also had a lot of kind of bilateral meetings with organizations and representative groups. There's a lot of information flowing into them. You know, the Human Rights Commission did a big session as well, which heard pretty much exclusively from asylum seekers themselves in direct provision, which was powerful. You know, it was a powerful, powerful session because it highlighted the mental health issues. It highlighted the health issues under COVID. It highlighted just family issues. How do you live as a family in a room? You know, all the stuff we know, but very powerfully conveyed by the asylum seekers themselves, you know. So there's been a lot going on, and I think a lot being fed into the minister as well around the alternatives. So this is all about how do we do it different and how do we move towards that? And I think, you know, I've said it on social media from meeting him a number of times in the last couple of months, I don't doubt his commitment to it. I think he is, you know, absolutely committed to the idea. And having talked to the officials that are responsible around the white paper and stuff like that, I think there's a huge amount of work going into it. I think they're being presented, obviously, as well with alternatives. You know, the Refugee Council have done great work on what the type of things that can be considered as alternatives and that need to start next year to start moving the ship towards a different model of housing and the international protection applicants. And I think what we've seen is a broad level of engagement, a lot of work going into what it looks like, a lot of realism and pragmatism about how to do it. And I think a very positive approach in that regard. The warning signs I would notice are the noises coming from other government departments and his cabinet colleagues and the other civil servants about, oh, this is, no, I don't think we can do this. I think this is hard. I think this is difficult, you know? And that was always going to happen because, as you said, this is 21 years into a temporary solution that became a long-term policy. And there's always going to be institutional resistance to changing. And that'll come from the civil servants. It'll come from some of the politicians as well. And it's the job of government now to try and overcome that resistance, to navigate and get through to the other side, you know? So they've got a considerable task ahead of them. They've got a considerable job ahead of them in trying to do this. But I think, you know, they're laying the foundations for it, and it's going in the right direction in that regard. But what we, you know, what we impressed upon the minister last week, Minister O'Gorman, is that next year they need to start testing the waters. They need to start doing pilots of alternatives to direct provision, you know, have them time bound, have funding streams for them, trying out different models and learn from them so you can get momentum and you can prove the concept. So he can go back to the cabinet table and say, look, we did this one and it worked. That's working great. We can do that, you know. So it's really practical. The conversation is really practical at the moment, but the resistance, the institutional resistance is starting, and that was always going to come, you know.
I think it's really, I feel a lot more optimistic that now that you've given me that insight, but I also have read the pushback and some of the talking points in the pushback. You know, there's clearly pushback from the Department of Housing. They seem to not want to take this on board in their remit. And we've heard some talking points used by the Justice Minister that belong in 2004, to be honest with you. And they've been disproven, you know, statements around immigration creating a problem for our health system, you know, when like, let's tell the truth here, our health system relies heavily on immigration, people, migrants who work within the system. Excuse my stumbling here. So do we have to have those arguments again, or are you confident that given the, as you said, the powerful testimony that's gone in, that coupled with public action, you know, because we've seen campaigns, but, you know, my fear is that we lose momentum behind the end direct provision campaign. You know, we've seen it this week where things are, people going obsessed with Brexit, what's happening now with Christmas, where's the COVID vaccines, all of this, and then it slips down the pecking order. Do you think we have, do we think we still have enough momentum?
I think, well, part of it is, like I say, seeing practical successes. So seeing them pilot practical things in 2021 that actually show that there is, that it's happening, that there's something tangible that you can hang your coat on and say, okay, there's a pilot of an alternative to direct provision that's ongoing there, you know, whether it's in relation to families, whether it's in relation to victims of trafficking, whatever it may be, that just shows a proof of concept. And if that doesn't happen in 2021, say we get a white paper either before the end of this year or early next year, whenever.
We were hoping to get it in December.
I think it's probably more likely to be January at this point in time. Now, they could prove us wrong, but I think the feeling is probably that it's definitely very complicated. So if it's January, it's not the end of the world, you know, as long as it comes. But if it's, you know, a white paper and then tumbleweeds, then there's a big problem, you know. So what the white paper needs to be followed up by is it need to be followed up by, you know, clear plans around moving into piloting alternatives to direct provision. So a clear strategy. And that's what the white paper should set out. It should set out the timings for when things are going to happen. This is what we're going to do. This is the budget we're going to allocate, all that kind of stuff, you know. But I think the crucial thing is political pressure. Again, you know, we said it the last time. Most politicians, you look at who talks about migration and integration in the Dáil and the Shannon, it's a minority of politicians. You know, there's a few trusty, solid people that bring it up constantly. And I mean in the positive. There's a few as well that bring it up in the negative every now and then.
Unfortunately, yeah.
There's a few of them. But like, for most politicians, this is an issue that's low down the pecking order, unless we're convinced otherwise, you know, unless they're convinced otherwise. And they're convinced otherwise by public pressure. Like, if you look back, you know, I was just thinking about it yesterday, about marriage equality, about repeal the 8th. All those movements have a huge thing to show us. And that's that politicians don't lead the way on a lot of social change issues. They follow the public when they see the public has gone that way. They go, okay, yeah, no, we've always been for that. And now we're definitely going to do it, you know. Like you think about marriage equality back in 2002, 2001, when it was starting in Ireland, there was no political support for it. And Labour came on after a few years and they were the first under Eamon Gilmore. And then it grew to, you know, 2015, everyone's elbowing each other out of the way to be in the front of the picture because they were there for it the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. Soldiers for the old road.
Yeah, yeah. Direct provision needs to be like that as well. And they will react to it if it's coming into their constituency office. That's the end of the day. Mm. They will react to it if there's calls and emails going in constantly to their constituency office saying, when's this happening? This needs to happen. You know, this, we need this. So you can do high level public events. You can do, you know, as many platforms as possible for asylum seekers themselves to describe the issue again and again and again. And organizations like us will do that. But individual people at their local constituency office, annoy the bejesus out of them, send them in emails, ring them, let them know that this is one of those social change issues that has to happen. And that needs to be maintained. If that doesn't happen, it'll drop down the pecking order.
Look, the last time we spoke about Ireland's, I'm going to put it, terrible performance in dealing with human trafficking. You know, at the time we had no successful convictions for human trafficking. We've had human traffickers convicted of other offences, but never for actual human trafficking. How did we get on since we last spoke, Brian?
heavy intake of breath. It is slowly moving in the right direction. So some good things that have happened. So the Human Rights Commission, IREC, have been appointed as a national rapporteur. So basically they are now responsible for monitoring Ireland's state performance on it and reporting directly to the Oireachtas. So that's been something we've been calling for many, many years to happen, that we need this independent verification of our trafficking response. So that's really positive. That has happened. There's stakeholder level engagement going on with the Department of Justice that has restarted since we last talked. So this has been kind of periodic. Every now and then they have done in the past few years engagement with the organizations that are working on the issue. And that dropped off for a while, but now it's re-engaged and the things they're looking at are, you know, more quickly identifying victims of trafficking, the issue of accommodation and direct provision and convictions. How are we going to get convictions? The conversation I talked about last time that had broken down between you know, civil society organizations, the guards and the DPP about how to actually get convictions for traffickers. So that's back on the table again. So it's inching in the right direction with all that level of engagement. And part of it, like we said, as well, is the accommodation issue. So just last week, we were saying to Minister O'Gorman, you know, victims of trafficking direct provision has been criticized for so long by so many, that needs to change. And next year you can pilot this in part of the overall direct provision reform. You can pilot, and part of it can be that victims of trafficking are moved out into community living with wraparound services. There's organizations there ready to go to do that. You need to give the green light to that and have that happen. So if that happens in 2021, that's significant progress in the accommodation issue in particular, you know. So we're getting there. We're definitely getting there. But at the same time, it is painstakingly slow. You know, we're still doing the legal representation of victims of trafficking in the organization. And it is, you know, it is one of the harder areas we deal with because it takes so long for them to get into a situation where they can be, they're sorted. You know, they have immigration status, their lives are back on track, they're feeling integrated. You know, well, one thing we did recently as well was we just finished a project that trained former victims of trafficking as mentors for newly identified victims of trafficking. And that was really powerful stuff because they had, one woman in particular was one of the main mentors who has gone through that experience, knows it inside out, and now she can work with victims of trafficking and talk to them on a level that, you know, can't be attained by a social worker or, you know, those of us that haven't gone through it. So it's all inching in the right direction. But I think, you know, overall, like what 2020 has seen in migration and integration in Ireland is that our approach is still extremely creaky. You know, the immigration system essentially ground to a halt under COVID. And there's huge problems with registration around the country, with processing of applications, with documents going missing. You know, lockdown has not worked for the immigration system and remote working has not worked for the Department of Justice in administering the immigration system. And it just highlights the need that we've always maintained that we need to reform our immigration system. Like, direct provision is one significant part of that, but our immigration system is really outdated. It's really bureaucratic. It's really paper-based, and it's not fit for purpose. You know, we're a modern country with a diverse population and a migration system.
I'd push back on that and say, I always get afraid when people say the word reform. And I wonder, should we not just rebuild or actually build anew? Because when you think of a system, as you know, you mentioned direct provision, a temporary system that's now 21 years old. We've spoken about, I've spoken to people in different parts of the country trying to maintain their immigration status, finding huge difficulties and huge variants of you know, availability. It's, you know, it's easier if you've access to urban areas, very difficult if you don't. You know, a lot of it dependent on access to Wi-Fi, access to actual supports, and legal representation is very thin on the ground. The work that you guys is really crucial, you know, which is why we need that wraparound kind of all aspects of it, whether it's be it mental health, legal supports, and community integration, which is obviously really crucial to going forward. If there was anything in 2020 that you thought, though, you know, was a win? Have you, like, is it that human right, the fact that it's gone now with the human rights organization?
In trafficking, definitely, I would say that's the case. I think as well, it's a win that that there are alternatives being considered to simply just putting victims of trafficking in direct provision. So that conversation is on the table. Like, it's not for definite yet that's going to happen, but we'll be very hopeful that it does, because it has to happen. So, like, there's positives there. Like, I suppose if we look at the year in general, in terms of the positives that came out of it, it's hard to look back on 2020 and pick out things that were, you know, shining examples of everything going well. But I think one of the things that's switched in regards to direct provision in particular, I definitely think, like, you know, the expression, a Rubicon has been crossed. I think we are in the place now where moving beyond that is no longer just kind of an aspiration of civil society and asylum seekers. It's part of the overall narrative of things, you know? And so I think it's really positive. I think a change in tone is perceptible there, even though we see a lot of the pushback and a lot of those kind of old arguments, as you say, from 2004 resurfacing as speaking points, which is shocking, frankly. You know, we need a different way of looking at these things, and those things don't help. They drag us back. So I think there's positives in that. One of the real positives of 2020, I think in particular as well, is the voices of people from a migrant background are much more to the forefront. Whether it was talking about racism under Black Lives Matter, whether it was talking about the second generation or 1.5 generation here in Ireland that have grown up in Ireland and they're as Irish as the next person, and their visibility has increased. And as well, asylum seekers and direct provision, their visibility has increased as well. So I think that's really useful. Like, organizations like us can be a bit of a conduit for that sometimes. But I think a lot of the time what we need to do is stand back and be a platform. Give a platform, whatever platform we can, give opportunities whatever way we can, and channel some of that. But ultimately, the conversation needs to be taken over and needs to be led by people from a migrant background themselves, and by asylum seekers themselves around direct provision reform. And Mazi are a fantastic group around that, you know. So I think that's a perceptible change in tone this year as well. That has changed. That's advanced, you know. And
I'd put it to you that there's one other change, and I'm saying this as one white man to another white man, with privilege enough to be born here and lived all our lives here, be able to sit back and say, we've begun to verbalize more frequently that what happened in 2004 around the referendum was wrong. And we need to address that as well. You know, that those conversations started to happen in 2020 that hadn't happened really previously. We kind of, you know, we pretended it hadn't happened, and we kind of neglected it. And that conversation has started now to be, you know, you can have it on a bar stool. Well, if you could go to a pub, you could have it on a bar stool. But nonetheless, that would be one thing that I've noticed has finally come into the discourse, that people are... you know, there's a element of regret that ever happened, and some sort of idea now that we need to put that right, which brings me on. Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, and credit to a couple of different sources for that. Like Ivana Bacik in Labour has done huge work this year around the citizenship bill that they have as regards children born in the state. And it's not done yet, but it's a lot of work has gone in there by Ivana and by Labour and Labour Youth, which is very good, and it's starting to get cross-party support. But as well, say the Migrant Rights Centre around kind of highlighting undocumented families and undocumented children in the state, they've done a lot of work around that as well. So this is kind of, you know, it's as I say, it's been a simmering issue for a long time. You know, 2004, like the 2004 referendum is basically the reason that I started working in this area 16 years ago, because I was working at the time in the US and briefly in Boston, and I came back to Ireland and I saw the media coverage at that time of what was going on, and I said, hold on, this is ridiculous. This can't be the case. This isn't the case. And this tone is really, really dangerous, you know? So I started volunteering somewhere. I ended up working in the Immigrant Council right at the time of the referendum. We campaigned against it, lost massively, as you know, like the overwhelming vote. But the type of arguments that were rolled out back then were incredibly dangerous. They weren't factually based. You know, we had talk of plane loads of African women pregnant showing up in Ireland.
Anchor babies.
That's wonderful, wonderful term. And I remember at the time, you know, masters of maternity hospitals going on the airwaves saying, this isn't true, by the way. Our maternity wards are not full of pregnant African women. You know, this is like, just so you know, these are the facts. But like the narrative at the time was incredibly, incredibly problematic. And as I say, it's been a bit of a trauma that hasn't been addressed. And I think is starting to be addressed now, and in the recognition that none of this is going to go away, lads. Mm. We have undocumented people in Ireland here that need rights. Same as we campaign for undocumented people in the US, or undocumented Irish people in the US, they need rights too. And we either start dealing with them sensibly and maturely and start doing it on a kind of a rights-based basis, or we're going to just keep going around in circles.
Look, I just want to point out to listeners, because we've spoken on this podcast several times to João Pina in Portugal, that when the COVID epidemic hit, one of the decisions they took was to normalize the undocumented. They brought everybody inside the tent, as so to speak, so everybody could get the health cover and the health care that they need. And now they're facing into no problems with people afraid to put themselves forward for vaccination. Mm-hmm. And we have to address that now. And I know there are steps being taken, but we're 9 months further on, and we should have been at this at the get go. So there's my critique of something that we fail to grasp. And we have, you know, we're talking now of regularizing. God, I hate the idea that regularizing people. Their people are people, but 17,000 people is the discussion at the moment. Can we look forward, if you don't mind, into 2021? Yeah. And can I ask you, what would you like to see happen in the coming 12 months?
I think, well, that's one definite issue. A scheme for regularization, as is the word. Like, these words would never survive outside the bubble of policymakers and you know, the likes of ourselves in civil society. But regularization for undocumented people needs to happen. It's a simple, compassionate process that addresses the issue in a sane, sensible way. That's what we need to see. That's one thing. What we'd like to see on a broader scale as well is a focus on our immigration system, to getting it up to speed, to getting greater policy and legislative clarity on our immigration system, to have an immigration system that isn't a bureaucratic mess and can break down under the pressure of an event like COVID, and one that is actually rights-based and makes sense and recognizes the fact that 99% of people who come to Ireland with positive purposes and intentions. You know, this idea that we have to scrutinize and overly analyze every single document and piece of paper because we're looking for terrorists or we're looking for fraudsters is a red herring that's thrown out far too regularly to justify an overly bureaucratic and creaky system. We need to have a modern immigration system that works in that regard. I think when it comes to issues of like racism and integration in particular as well in 2021, like capitalizing on the fact that there are so many brilliant spokespeople out there that can describe the issues that they're facing, like we talked about earlier around asylum seekers and people from a migrant background and people from, you know, different ethnic minority backgrounds. One of the things we said to the minister last week when we met him as well is you need to figure out a way that they can engage with policymakers on a regular and constructive basis. You know, they need to be sitting around the table. So when we think about, say, for example, it's a national migrant integration strategy in Ireland, that's going to be looked at next year for renewal. There'll be a new one in 2022. And we said around that, for you know, you need to plan as part of that how you get the voices of people that are directly affected sitting across from the policymakers, not at an arm's distance, not removed, you know.
Inside the room, definitely.
Yeah, well, big time, you know. Nothing, what is it?
Nothing about us without us.
That's the one. And, you know, organizations like ourselves can play a part in that. We can be a conduit, we can facilitate, we can go, you know, whatever, but it needs to happen. And the other thing is immigration reform around our citizenship approaches in Ireland as well. So it's not just the issue of children, but the issue of cost, the issue of processing times. You know, it costs a lot of money to become an Irish citizen, and it's such a massive integration thing for people. A lot of people think, you know, for some of them, it's just getting out of the immigration system. For some people that apply for citizenship, it's like, okay, I no longer have to queue at Burger Key or get an appointment or get my card renewed. I can leave all that behind me. And citizenship should be so much more than that. It should be much more about identity and belonging and things like that. So we need to make it more accessible. We need to bring the cost down for low-income families. So there needs to be a reform around citizenship process as well. And I think we have good opportunity in Ireland to do all of this. You know, like, we're at the point in time where we still have, you know, we have a sizable population of people from a migrant background. But the approach we have at the moment works for neither the state nor those who are applying. You know, it's expensive, it's bureaucratic, it doesn't work. But we're at the point in time now where we're at a bit of a crossroads. We have an opportunity now to reform our approaches and, as you say, maybe completely reimagine some of them. While we're in the headspace as well, where we have majority public, positive public attitudes around migration. And that's what we do have in Ireland. We have majority positive public attitudes and a very vocal minority who aren't. And we need to guard that. And the way we guard that is by making our systems better and by giving people rights and opportunities that they can get out there and they can say, look, I'm a member of the community. I'm integrated. I'm able to work. I'm contributing. What's the problem here, lads? There's no problem, you know? So we do that as a state by improving how we do things. And that will benefit everybody. And it'll make those minority voices have very little to hang their coat on when they're trying to say migration is a bad thing for Ireland.
Brian Killoran of the Immigrant Council of Ireland, I am so happy that you've laid out what should be the vision that we all need to push towards. Just to remind folks, it's immigrantcouncil.ie and there's a /donate. So, you know, don't be shy. It's Christmas. Do a nice thing for people who are actually representing people who have no voice in many ways, and helping them get that platform. And let's push on for better in 2021. And the final call is make sure you don't stop irritating your own TD, your own local TDs and councillors about this white paper and how it's crucial we move forward to end direct provision. We don't want to make it nicer. We don't want to make it softer. We want to end it. Talk to you all soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.